You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good,
Johnson.
From the AfterBuzz studios in Los Angeles, California, and streaming live on Ustream, this is AfterBuzz TV for Breaking Bad. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest Breaking Bad news and gossip. If you'd like to buzz in on tonight's show, you can buzz us at 424-256-1729. That's 424-256-1729. And now, picking up where the show leaves off and the buzz continues, it's AfterBuzz TV for Breaking Bad.
Oh, hey, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another AfterBuzz of Breaking Bad, Season 4, Episode 11, Crawl Space. I'm John Comerford, your host. I'm joined in the studio by Kevin Undergaro, Big Ben, and then Steve Bottomley, and we got Jesse Janity in the booth. Guys, I think this one was the adrenaline-packed episode.
Man.
It started with adrenaline. It ended with adrenaline. And I was exhausted by the end of it. Do I have agreement there?
Yep. Music-wise, everything. They just pumped and pumped and pumped.
I wasn't exhausted. I still just wish I could have all 12 hours.
In a row?
Yes. I'm like dying. I have to wait enough. And I'm not only dying that I have to wait a week, that I actually have to wait 2 more weeks. To get to the end of this season, which that's a good segue into two weeks from now, October 8th. Unless anything gets in the way to stop it, we are hopefully going to be broadcasting the season finale live from the John Lovitz Comedy Club in front of a live studio audience. Maria Menounos will join us to host, and we will hopefully have Aaron Paul and some other people from the show.
A reprise from our Emmy,
that's awesome.
Emmy gift suites when Aaron stepped in for a few minutes. It was great to talk to him, and we're working out schedules now to have him come back for that.
Which would be amazing. So hopefully we'll have more details next week. Phil's going to get into it tomorrow with them. But we're excited. Anyway, to be with more fans of this show,
exactly.
I can only imagine how they feel. So.
Yeah. And hopefully get some more input from them as well. That would be interesting. I always love when the fans call in. So, okay. I don't even know where to begin with this one. I was exhausted after I was watching this. It was great to see all that Gus was going through, and you could see that how deep his machinations have gone and how much to start off with the fact that he had a ready-made ER unit set up to go because he knew he was going to need it. And not only did he need it, they were extremely well packed and ready for anything, any contingency that might come along in killing Don Eladio and what it might happen in the aftermath. Did anybody see that coming?
No, I mean,
not at all.
Okay. When they were showing the ER unit, I was thinking, you got to be kidding me.
You knew right away. See, I just thought it was a Mexican hospital.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
As soon as I saw the plastic and everything. This is how deep this guy planned this out.
Yeah.
It's a great example of just showing, look, this guy is always 4, 5, 6 steps ahead of anybody.
Yeah.
Which, you know, as they have this chess match with...
I know. Does Walt even have a shot? Because Walt doesn't think so.
That's what I love about it. The chess match. Walt is able
to hang in when Walt isn't 5 or 6 steps ahead?
Only because he's been able to cook.
Yes.
That's the only reason. Because he's been able to cook.
And cook so well at 99%,
that's
right,
Ben? Yeah. And Gus hasn't been able to do anything about it until now. So, because until then, this is my guy. I got to live with this. Because he's the only one that can cook like this. So that's what's going to be keeping him alive, of course. But here's the thing that I find interesting. It seems that, obviously it seems like Gus is the mastermind of all this, an incredible chess player, very intelligent, all that kind of stuff. But I don't think for a second that Walt isn't less intelligent. He just says he has an intelligence that isn't used to this playing field.
I agree.
So I can't wait to see when he starts really taking the turn saying, okay,
all right,
in wrestling terms, we say hulking up.
Exactly. Yeah. I've got to play in this world, on this field. Okay. Now, he's going to still be inexperienced. I mean, Gus has been doing it for, 30 years, 40 years? I don't know how long. 30 years, I guess. So he obviously knows the field better, but it's going to be great when Walt realizes, okay, I can't rely on just my intelligence. I got to get in here and really play this game.
You certainly can't rely on the fact that he has the recipe because
Jesse's
only 96.
Yeah.
But
that's good enough.
He still can do it. And this is what I love about it. Every time you think, dude, all you have to do is say this, the conversation never happens. They are always being manipulated against each other.
What a great scene. I know I'm jumping ahead, but the great scene with him in the desert. Okay, hold on. Let's get to it. But I mean, how long have we been waiting for that?
Too many great
you'll
scenes
never,
to go through.
Remember what Mike said? You'll never see Gus again.
And so, that must be a credit to Walt in some way.
Yeah, because now you have
that he forced that, and Jesse.
Yeah, absolutely. What a surprise that was.
Not to pimp that scene too much, but could you not just see Gus just wanting to just cap him right there? It was killing him to have to say.
And it was nice to see emotion out of Gus, which shows that like Walt is under his skin.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, which is good. Because Gus is at his best when he shows no emotion.
Right.
Yes.
That's when he's
But the last
control.
Couple, he has been kind of like, he's slipping.
Yeah, you can see laying it in. The little twitch of the finger here.
He's losing his calm demeanor.
Leave it to Walt.
Which means that the recipe for the chicken is not going to be good.
Yes.
Right.
So, and I'm going back to the ER unit. When Jesse saw his own blood, not his own blood, but blood ready for him.
Jesse's like, what have I gotten into?
Exactly.
But, you know, it was just interesting that Jesse was taking up for Mike.
Oh, yeah.
And here's
what I'm wondering.
I love that
This part is what I found so interesting. He's so ensconced now because he knows that he could be at death's door any second now, too. All he had to do was not help them, and he'd be free.
Sure.
Right.
They were so debilitated.
Right.
They're ready to die, Gus and Mike.
I was watching it with Maria, you know, and she's, so masculine in her thinking. She's like, he just needs to let them both die.
Yeah, just walk away.
Just business, you know, that's better business rather than be, you know, bonded to these guys.
But that's not his character. It would be against his character. It might be his character to think about it for a second, but he can't.
He's a good kid.
Plus, in the back of his head, he may know, you know, he has no idea how long Gus's reach is. You know, he probably doesn't know what kind of contingency plan.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
I'm with you.
No, but he was talking. Yeah. But you know why, Steve? I don't think that factored in because he was open to killing him with the poison.
Yeah, exactly.
Cigarette, you know,
right,
the poison.
Right.
He already had it in his head. And he couldn't on a few occasions or didn't on a few occasions. Here, it would have been easy.
Yeah,
there's no one to stop him.
No, he just got caught up in being loyal.
Yeah, just caught up in being. And the adrenaline rushing or whatever. And he thought, I'm going, why didn't he even cross his mind?
They laid that in really well with the last few episodes of him hanging with Mike and, you know, going out and Mike being like the father figure for him and, you know, good job, kid, and all that stuff. So when he says, get us out of here, kid, he's kind of like, oh, dad wants me to get him out of here.
But here's the thing. Right. But what I thought for me would have been is a missed beat is where was the thought of, wait a minute, I could be free and clear and not have to live, not have to deal with having deaths hanging over my head? I just let them die of natural causes, so to speak. I didn't do it. I just didn't help them.
You know,
they're already dead.
You mentioned the blood scene. I don't know which would be more disturbing if I were Jesse. Seeing blood labeled for me?
Or not seeing
any blood labeled for me.
Right.
So I would feel a little like, I'm covered. That's a really nice setup, too. They use Tulson coolers, which are top
They're the
line.
Best.
Yeah.
So shout out to Tulson.
Shout out to Tulson.
Yeah, it would be a little bit. Wait a minute, where's my blood?
Feel free to contact me. I could use one.
But I just think it would have been interesting if they at least showed me that moment. I would have loved to have seen that moment on Jesse of thinking, I could be free of this. Because that's the whole thing that they've been trying to do is get out from under this.
Right. And don't you think the adrenaline was just going, John?
Even if you're driving five minutes, you're going to be thinking something.
Right, yeah.
And even that stop, you know, and just to see him, because I love the way he acts. The guy's amazing. And see, have him play it all in his face, have him look at the guy, whatever.
Right.
That would have been fascinating.
Here's what I was wondering when they're driving up, and I'm assuming Mike was still conscious enough to be giving him directions, but how did he know where to go? Because if he was involved at the very beginning.
That's a good point.
Then he would have known the hospital set up. We need to go here. So Mike had to have still been, and Mike was conscious. So he was probably saying,
he probably directed
going to go here.
Yeah, because he walked him in. So
right. Yeah.
But Mike looked pretty
There's
bad.
There's the necklace.
Yeah, exactly.
There's the necklace.
And then the whole reason why he took the necklace, we find out later. which is great.
Oh, the best line in it. You know, what about here? He's my friend. He pays my salary.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, so while all that is happening, we go back to Walt, and he's cooking in the lab.
Right.
He's just cooking by himself.
All alone.
And all alone. He can barely lift things because he's still beaten up. And I don't know about you guys, but he was coughing a lot more in this.
Yeah.
Did you guys notice
that?
They're
bringing that beat up.
So yep. That was interesting. So we're going to find out if he was really holding out on us, whether or not his cancer is in remission or not.
What do you think the beat was about him mismeasuring the
couldn't figure that out either.
He was off by 0.2, right?
Was it,
no,
it was just an honest
one.
Mistake?
No, it was 0.02.
0.09, actually.
40.1, or...
It's 40.3, and then it's Noah's 40.21, so 0.09 he was off.
Anyway, you know why? Why?
Well, I don't know, but I'm either he just made an honest mistake or it's just his little, because Walt is really passive aggressive to some degree.
Yeah, right.
So
it might have been him doing it on purpose,
just to mess with him. And then not only did it not work, he got called out for it.
Right.
He's still being watched by the man. Boy, he was great. I don't even know his character's name at the moment. What's his name?
The new henchman, the new victim.
No, nobody knows. I don't think they've said
that.
The man
great.
With no name.
I thought he was terrific in this. He barely said anything, but just the little looks on his face. And then when they came out with the taser, little thing, and the light on that thing.
Okay.
Oh, he looked amazing.
Hey, can I be just, because, I do the Jersey Shore, so I just have to bring you, the low-life end of this.
Go ahead.
I'm fucking sick of this shit. I want Walt to fucking wipe all these motherfuckers out. Gus had me last week. I was cheering for him, but what? He showed what a evil fucking cocksucker he is, what a sadistic, evil motherfucker he is. And when Walt was on his knees and he was crying for his family, you see again, no matter how many bad decisions he's made, there's still a decency left within him, and you see it. And there's obviously a great decency in Jesse. I'm ready for them to turn the guns.
Yeah.
I'm so fucking ready for Walter to score a comeback. I've had it. It's coming. I'm promising
but
you,
that's
it's coming.
Oh, yeah. That's the chess match. And now they've positioned Walt where they said, not only are you getting knocked off the board, we're not going to give you anything to fight back with.
Right.
And you're going, well, how is he going to do it?
He's a cornered rat.
And also, I'm sure you're obviously not alone in feeling that. I'm sure 90% of the people out there are feeling that. But that's one of the reasons why it's so damn good. Because you keep fighting for these things, you keep wanting these things, and you keep coming back because it hasn't happened yet. They just keep turning the screws and turning the screws. So by the time he's actually doing all the crazy stuff, we're going to go, yeah.
It's great because when Walt finally gets the upper hand, whether, look, I'm the only guy that can cook or whatever, he you're right, he's got the brains to get the upper hand, but he doesn't have the street sense to hold it and to manipulate it into a better position.
He demonstrates two-dimensional thinking.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah.
He'll work into that. He'll get into three-dimensional thinking very soon. So.
I didn't want to go all street on you. Let's get back to
the smart
assessment.
Oh, God.
Little visit to the streets.
And then the whole thing with, okay, let's do the side story with Walt. So when we first see them in the pickup in the car with Walt, and they're going to go out on the stakeout, and Hank wants to know about what happened to his face. Here's speaking to your point right now, what is Walt's line? I'm done explaining myself. So we know it's going to happen. They just keep really being stingy about when it's going to happen. But he gets closer and closer, and the screws get tighter and tighter, and you know he's going to explode. I mean, let's face it, at the end, that end shot with him going nuts, I mean...
He's going into madness.
He's going into madness, absolutely, crying and then laughing. The dude is, he's bent.
Literally in a box.
It's like Hamlet Shakespeare bent. I mean, he's ready to go crazy.
Can you score a comeback from this, though? Will that help you?
What's that? To go
to be mad, right?
But that might be what finally gets him to think outside of his box.
Oh, outside of the box.
Gus is one mistake.
Hey guys,
what's up?
We're trying to get our AfterBuzz dear friend on the line.
Awesome. I think Gus's mistake was to threaten his family.
Yep.
I'll tell you why. Because now he's going, I've got nothing.
You're right, because he had cancer. I know I'm dead anyway, but now you're going after my family.
Right, and I've got nothing to lose now.
Right.
Because if I don't do something about it, you kill my family.
Right.
He took the first step to try to protect him. Yeah. He can't do that, so he took a step.
And you never
want
to put a guy like that with nothing left to lose.
Yeah.
And now it's like, okay, you're going to kill my family anyway.
I don't want to get into predictions, but I guess we'll talk about what
we are jumping a bit on this one.
It doesn't matter. I mean, we don't have to go in order. I mean,
It's funny. Do you want to talk about the visit to the old man?
Sure. Let's get okay. Let's stick
with
that.
We'll get back into Hank. Because Hank said some interesting things. I want to get your take on. So there's some great quotes.
Don't allow the old. So when he died, Mike was sure to take the necklace he wore around his neck, and we postulated why he was doing that. And we had a couple of thoughts about it, and it came back. And one of them was
Had said it was for proof.
Yeah, I said to prove that he killed Donato. So he visits Hector once again, the old man in the hospital.
Or the nursing home.
Yeah, the nursing home, which I believe it is. And that's when the necklace comes out to prove to Hector that Gus got the better of his entire family and that the Salamanca family is no more. Or Hector, I should say, is the last one left.
And why did he singled out Jesse? Because Hector had a chance to kill him and didn't?
I'm sure it was because at some point he was talking about the whole Joaquin thing. Joaquin is the youngest, so he would be his next legacy,
right?
And even he's dead. Why did he single out Jesse? I think it's just that story he was saying about how I can't remember the details. You remember the details of Don Joaquin and the not Don Joaquin, but Joaquin and the earlier section with Jesse.
All I know is Gus was telling the story of how Jesse gunned him down, and that now Hector is the last Salamanca.
Yeah,
alive, and I think he singled Jesse out because of their previous experiences.
Yeah, together. It had to be because they let Jesse live last time.
So in other words, it's another mistake that came back to haunt you.
Exactly. You didn't kill me earlier. You didn't kill.
That's where I figured they were going. This was a mistake. You should have cleaned up like me. You should have cleaned me up when you killed my buddy. I thought it was an odd beat because it wasn't a little gunfight, but the gunfight that Jesse, you know, saved him with.
Right.
I didn't realize who he was shooting at. It was kind of a quick sort of, it's a bad guy in the bushes and he's done. But then Gus is referencing, you know, we shot this guy as we were making our getaway. So
I missed
that beat, I guess.
You were saying how Gus was probably saying, you should have killed me when you had the chance. Like, this is your fault because you didn't clean me up. But that kind of, that agrees with what happened with Walt later, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like Walt, he made that mistake, and now Gus is definitely going to pay.
Yeah, well, there you go. Exactly. Well, that happens. I mean, that's the typical. I mean,
You'll have a lot of thoughts on this, but how about opening on Bridge?
Bridge on the River Kwai.
Alec Guinness saying, What have I done?
Exactly.
And can you guys, can John, you and Steve give the audience some context of some of our younger viewers who might not know Bridge on the River Kwai? Just briefly, the movie and that moment.
Okay.
For the actor Alec Guinness.
Well, Alec Guinness, this is World War II, and he plays a prisoner of war, and he comes to, and he's the ranking officer that gets.
For the British Army.
And he gets. I don't know if they bring him into the camp, and now he is the ranking officer
in the internment camp. He's a prisoner
prisoner of war camp,
right?
Japanese.
And so what the Japanese are trying to do is build a bridge, and they're using the prisoner of war to do it. And the prisoners of war don't want to do it because they obviously don't want to help.
Yeah, why would we help the enemy? But
Alec Guinness says, "No, we're British soldiers." And we will build the best bridge that ever has been built.
And this way, we'll keep our troops unified. We'll keep our troops sharp. Look at them; they're fat. They're getting out of shape.
Exactly.
So it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
But again, there's just an ugly irony to it.
Yeah, because like they actually end up building this amazing bridge, and this bridge, of course, is gonna trains are gonna go across it to help the enemy because the Japanese are gonna use it to move people, machine, material, all that weaponry, all that kind of stuff. And they build a damn thing, and then he realizes what he's done.
By the end of it, that's like, what have I done?
What have I done?
And, of course, only for William Holden and the Americans to blow it up.
Exactly.
Right.
Of course.
Right.
We saved the day. Absolutely.
Always clean it up.
It's not until after that he realizes what he's done, and which is exactly what's happening. You know, obviously the metaphor is there. Hector has, what have I done? Because he's looking at his life and his family. What have I done? Because he's created it.
What he done, but then also take a step back. It's Walt. What have I done?
Because it's always the small decisions, always doing what we think is the right thing, or maybe it's the wrong thing for the right reasons, or it's the wrong thing for the right wrong thing for the right decision. But it's always that little thing that's
out of integrity. That's that little slippery thing, that rationalization that allows us to make a choice that isn't the right choice, but allows us to make it anyway. And then the second one happens, it's easier, and the third and the fourth and the fifth, and pretty soon we're building a damn bridge for the enemy and killing and helping to kill our fellow.
And choosing to only look at
the moment
you wanted to
rather than the
anyway,
big picture.
Instead of, do you realize you're building a bridge? No. We are sharpening our minds. We are doing everything else except, except this.
Because, I mean, well, it's the same thing. I'm just providing for my family.
Exactly. You could take every character in this, and any one of them could be building that bridge because they're all doing the same thing. Except maybe...
You know, they also mentioned somewhere in there 3 Days of the Condor, and I don't and I don't know about that movie. How does that symbolically pay off?
Because
you know everything,
Robert Redford,
and them do here, which is, I'm like stunned because every line, every word, there's a meaning. It ties back to something. So 3 Days of the Condor, another movie.
First of all, movie. Amazing movie. If you ever get a chance, and it holds up for me anyway, except the outfits, but it holds up great.
Right.
Taut thriller.
Robert Redford.
He plays an analyst. He reads books. That's all he does.
That's all he does.
He goes out for lunch one day. He comes back, and everybody in his section, meaning his CIA section, is killed.
Gone.
And the only reason why he survived is because he went out to get lunch that day and came back a different way or something like that. And everybody's killed while he was out. And now he doesn't know why or how, or, and he's trying to, you know.
My
he's
God,
not, he's not,
is this foreshadowing?
He's not an analyst. He's not a field, I mean, he's an analyst. He's not a field agent. No. He's not prepared for this.
His whole line through the whole thing is, I just read books.
Exactly.
I just read books. And he doesn't know who to trust. Yeah. He doesn't know where to turn.
But there's Walt, who's just a chemistry teacher.
And he has to use his brains the whole time to outwit all these field agents.
There you go. So that's the symbolism.
Exactly.
Wow, genius.
Yeah. And he has to come in from the cold. So anyway, that's the...
Do you notice there was lots of talk of air filtration, you know, the air filtration system, of course, it seems like a tie back to lung cancer.
Yeah, and it's always the tie back to, you know, well, not metaphorically to the lung cancer, but obviously it's a tie back to Gale, which is
a
soft spot and a lever point for Walt, because he knows that Gale's dead.
Well, it's also a great device to find out, for Walt to find out how much Hank knows, because while Hank is just kind of... you know, giving a laundry list of where he's at in this investigation, you can see Walt is like going, man, you are 3 steps away from finding this. And Walt is connecting all the dots on how far away Hank is. While Hank is just saying, there's this Eric Field, you know, and he's just kind of glib about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love seeing Walt just try to think up excuses and try to throw him off track. You know, it's just... Yeah. You're not good at it.
Yeah, he's horrible at it. And
I don't think that's a good
lead. He has to, you know, get into a car accident because he's horrible at it.
You guys, what was?
It isn't wait, but the
I
car accident.
That. I loved it.
You know, I loved it. I mean, this is how. I know you talk about the symbolism, but here's what I thought. So he's got to go. He knows he's going to wreck the car, and I thought it was interesting that he took the left turn. Because that's what where he said to go, but he gave that's the injury side to Hank. My point is the self-preservation side he took. It would have been easier for Hank's already hurt, right? Put him at jeopardy,
of course,
because the self-preservation is there. My point is the guy's got a good self-preservation thing going on, so which I think just helps in his turn, because at some point he is going to turn and say, okay. All bets are off.
So do you think that was a conscious decision by Gilligan and them?
Where it just seemed like
natural to take a U-turn.
Right. But why not just go right? I mean, you could have done anyway. But I'm just saying, I don't know. But when we always talk about this, we always say, these guys never make a... there's no...
I don't think, I think he thinks everything through.
So, but, you know, because it'd be interesting. Seriously, you got a guy who's just out of the hospital and you turn him into the car.
He does. He's got this up. But, he also, it's. I guess he's not so far gone because he pleads to Saul for Hank's life.
Oh yeah,
you know. So he does.
No,
he does care.
My
you know,
point is that he doesn't want any harm. He's got that in him.
Gotcha.
Oh, I think every step he takes with Hank is because he wants Hank to stay alive. I think Walt's concern is keeping this in his box and not hurting anyone else around him.
As much as he can.
So that's why he's driving Hank around, to protect him in his odd way.
Yeah, but don't you think at this point, I mean, as much as in denial as he is, he's got to realize this is not going to end pretty for anybody. I mean, the people he loves are going to get hurt. They already have. Hank, he's part of his family. Now, that's one removed from his family. But he's got to know by now. I mean, even before the threat from Gus, he's got to know. I mean, you can't be in that much denial.
I think figured he had control over it because he was the cook and he always had that ace in the hole that no one could touch.
But seriously,
as soon as Jesse said,
I can't buy it. He's too smart a guy. If my life's in jeopardy, how could he not see? Look, if they really want to get to me, all they have to do is go after my family. Jesse's one thing, you know, they can kind of go after him, put the wedge in there. But if he's got to know, Gus, how could you not see that coming? I mean, Gus is the kind of guy.
So you think Walt did see this all coming?
No, or? What I'm saying is I'm surprised that hasn't come up. Let's put it that way. Because how would Gus not want to use that if he wanted to wrangle Walt and really squeeze him and get him under control? That's the first thing I would have done.
But this is the first episode where we have seen more of the cartel Gus. Up to this point, it's always been about business, about... So we keep this on a business.
And his moves have been logical. First, try to get the formula, get this, get that. And now he's at a place he didn't think he'd be at with Jesse being loyal to him, but he's like, no, in time.
Or do you think he realized that, like I said earlier, if he threatened the family, then it might go too far?
Yeah, he probably knows he would put him into a corner.
Maybe. That's the reason why Gus wouldn't do it. That's why, and I would agree with that. But I can't believe that Walt hasn't even considered that.
Oh, why didn't he move his kids?
Yeah, do something.
Yeah, he knew his life was hanging by a thread.
I think it goes back to the bridge building. I think Walt was always just seeing his little portion of the bridge, trying to contain it, instead of like realizing that this could explode any minute and there could be people. Because remember, he did miss the two assassins sitting on his bed, which I think would have changed the game for him. So, but we may see a little bit of that.
Right.
That's why I thought that moment with Gus in the desert, that was really, wow, that's a side we're not really seeing because... You're exactly right. Now he's bringing in family. Now he's bringing in future. You know, it's
his voice was deeper. There definitely was more emotion.
Gus has always been about the present. It's always been about what do we need to do now? This is the first time we really saw him say, you know, we're talking about your future and your family's future. And so that's a game changer, definitely.
Speaking of game changer, I don't know if this is a game changer so much, but I found this interesting. So when Gus talks to Jesse and he's saying, so, you know, what you've proved now is that you don't need Walt to cook.
Mm.
Right.
Mm.
And Jesse says, let him go. Don't kill him.
Don't kill Mr. White.
Don't kill Mr. White.
Oh, such a great moment.
Don't kill Mr. White.
I love it. Says Mr. White.
That's amazing.
And Gus says,
still calling him Mr. White.
Yeah, exactly. And Gus says, you know, it won't work that way. And he says, well, then you got a problem. And puts it right on
him. He's so amazing, Jesse.
And then, but then when Walt actually comes to Jesse,
again,
all that's gone.
Yeah.
Again, that's where I'm saying.
It's a great dysfunctional father-son.
That's the conversation you want to have.
And he accused him. He says, you had them come to our place.
Yeah. And when I wanted help, you told me to die in a barrel in Mexico.
Right.
So those things, he remembered that, obviously. And that came back to haunt. I mean, that's why Walt's just made so many bad choices.
He has.
I remember he was looking through the lab, you know, and everything, and I just kept flashing back to that little motorhome that they started in, you know.
Yeah.
Like I'm stumbling out in his underwear and the breather, and
you've
come so far, where you are.
Yeah.
But speaking of bad decisions, we've kind of skipped the whole Skyler, Ted.
Oh, we'll get to that. Go ahead, bring it up now. Let's talk about that.
I was kind of surprised by how that went down.
Yeah.
When
the first time Ted trips over the little throw rug there,
I knew that was coming.
Yeah, you just went, oh, okay.
Yeah, you knew it was there.
You just couldn't. I was just, well, okay, that's coming back. Now, how are they going to bring that one back?
Yeah, I didn't know how they're going to play it, but yeah, if they introduce it, it's going to come back.
And how about Huel making a stand?
Which
one? Huel's the big black guy.
The security guy?
Yeah. That was great. And do you know who the other guy is?
The other actor is actually, I'm sorry, I'm having a brain freeze. He's an amazing Boston comedian.
Well, he did a nice job. I appreciate that. So what do you think about Ted? You know, I love his stance. No, I just can't do it. It just seems wrong. And, of course, Skyler, who's really good at calling a spade, said, Now you think it's wrong?
Now you have
committing fraud.
Once again,
he doesn't want someone looking over his shoulder. He wants the money, and he just leave me alone. I have this money, and he doesn't want anyone looking over his shoulder.
And another one with a series of bad decisions.
Yeah,
right. I just did this for my
trying to protect my my business. Keep my dad's business going.
Was Ted blackmailing her, or did she just infer that?
No, I think it was veiled, and I think Skyler saw right through it.
I think there was a better way.
Didn't he push harder at the end?
I don't think he was expecting her to call him on it.
Right.
I think he was expecting to, I'll just say it this way, and the next time I talk to her, I say, look, I'd like to do it, but I can't do it at this moment. I need more. I need your help. And he was going to play it. I think he was going to play it that way and hopefully get away with it and not have her.
Yeah, he didn't want to give up his lifestyle.
No. Obviously, the first thing he did was buy a Mercedes.
And I thought that was kind of I thought that was going to be a very interesting storyline where they're going to connect. Now you have this pressure of him saying, well, I'm going to need more.
Yeah.
Now you have that bleed coming off of, you know, all the balls in the air.
And I didn't want him to die because I wanted the other guy in the mix because I wanted Walt to have another point of, wait, the guy that cuckolded me?
Yeah.
And he's gone now. So I didn't want him to die so quickly. I'm sure they have a good reason for it. I'm sure they've got it figured out better than I do. But I liked him being in the.
Maybe he's just in a coma.
Yeah, because it also brought Skyler up.
Yeah, we don't know if he's dead. I mean, Steve, are you joking?
No, but they said at the end that it was we saw his finger moving, but then the guys at the end of the scene the A team was Saul.
Yeah,
I thought they said he was dead.
They never actually said it.
Saul said,
"Oh,
what are we
going to
do? Call her up and say, oh, the check's in the mail, but." And then he's like,
"Oh, so we never actually said it.
No.
Well, his hand did move at the end, so maybe
there
he's
was
not
a little twitching.
I don't know. So, if anybody has any thoughts on that, let us know. So, was there any more on the whole? Were you surprised by what Skyler did and how she tried to handle it? I thought it was interesting that she went right to Saul.
Mm.
No, yeah, really, I didn't. Because I was thinking about that beat today, and I just figured that was going to be her only move.
The reason why I was surprised by it is, you know, usually she tries the direct approach, which is what she did here, like, you know, and what she did before. She usually tries the direct thing, and then she'll find a way around. Let's face it, when she became the little tart that when she went into the IRS audit.
Right. Buying the car wash.
Right. She's always found this way. In this one, usually there's a much more subtle way of how she gets what she wants, how she's doing
right.
it. And this way was just
pretty direct.
Yeah, very, very direct.
What I find interesting about her was the fact that when Marie called and at the end of the show, Marie calls and Walt has his meltdown in the crawl space, she went and picked up the phone and stayed calm. And to me, that shows that she's going to really help him.
Yeah.
Steer this ship.
While he's going
she's
nuts.
She's
going
to help pull out of this.
She maintained her composure.
Right. She's showing again, which we've been seeing every week, that she has what it takes.
Yeah.
In other words, their marriage is getting stronger since they are now both separated and going their different ways.
I think what we've been saying is she's been proving that there's more inside of her than just some kind of dopey, ditzy housewife, which is what seemed like she was season one. You know, cruising eBay and just buying things and selling them. And now it shows that she's got more gumption. And more smarts and more poise. You know, what was the symbolism behind yogurt, ice cream? It's the same thing. Was that just rationalization?
I don't know.
I didn't think anything.
I think it was just banter.
I just don't think they throw things away.
I think they had that discussion in the writer's
room. I think a rationalization. Like just another, it's the same, you know, it's to rationalize the way they've rationalized all the crazy stuff. I do, because I think it's just every piece of this, you know, for these guys, they have their, 44 minutes or whatever, and it's just,
what I think is it may have started like that, but I think I don't think any of it's wasted, is that it seems like it's just banter or whatever, but it seems like they always imbue whatever the banter is, and they always bring it back to either the storyline, the character, whatever
I've not known them not to in these many seasons. And it was interesting that Hank said, free food, and it's even better if it's free drinks. And I wonder if he's been getting free health care. I wonder if it doesn't show that he'll at some point go along with helping Walt, that he doesn't have a side to him that'll bend a little bit.
Yeah.
That'll bend a little
bit. Well, he has done some things in order to get
When he beat up Jesse, you mean he's bended the law?
Yeah, he's kind of gone outside the law. And he even said, what does he say? He said that one line. What was it? Was kind of like bending it or whatever, breaking it.
Oh, when they were putting the bug.
When?
When they were putting the GPS tracker on Gus's car. He was kind of, well,
not really legal, but.
Yeah, it's not. Not really legal.
So I was wondering, when he said the line about the free food, free drinks, I was wondering if that's not going to pay off in some way.
A little bit of a foreshadow of him acknowledge everything they've done.
We'll get more into it, I'm sure, in predictions. You know, the other thing is, I keep seeing more blue and tan. At the boss's place, it was all blue and tan. And then one of the last shots of Walt in the desert, you know, the tan sand and the blue sky. It's just interesting. I can't wait to sit with these guys and find out what all the colors mean.
Okay, I have a question about that scene to the filmmakers in the room. Was that just serendipity of that cloud moving past, or were they looking at that thing going, okay, let's go ahead?
I wonder if Phil saw that. I don't know if that was...
that was awesome.
That was amazing.
Whether they planned that or...
So you don't think that was CGI or anything like that?
No, because I was looking at the windshield of the car, and you could see it was all passing over.
Like a real cloud was actually...
I think it was a lot of CGI, but it could be done
CGI. You're out there in what is it, New Mexico, wherever they're filming.
Clouds do move pretty quickly.
Yeah, they move, and they might have just they stuck the wide there, and then
they probably just.
I mean, remember the rain in Cereal Buddies.
We got rain at the perfect time.
Exactly, it happens in the movie, and it just happens to be perfect, and we got lucky there
because it goes so much to the scene of there's a cloud over you guys.
It just might have been kids.
In the darkness and the light.
You're in the dark, and it was just.
We should ask them about that.
My guess is they filmed that more than once.
And they probably filmed the entire scene in that wide.
Absolutely.
It's a very long scene. Yeah. You know? So chances are good. And it might have just been those film magic moments
Put it in because it was amazing. And if they did put it in, whoever did the work on that was amazing.
You had a question about the color. What do you think all the purple represents in their house?
Marie is always purple.
Yeah, but what does that
color? But we're seeing threads of purple throughout it. It's royalty. It's usually it could be religion too, right, John?
Yeah, it's either royalty or spiritual.
The purity of what his quest is to the purity of his
He's usually in something else, but
yeah, I would think it'd be related to her.
We see it. We also see Gus was wearing it when he visited the hospital, when he visited the old age home. You see him in some purple, which was a twist. Mm-hmm. And also, Saul had a purple shirt on, I think. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing it throughout, but it's definitely most prevalent with
Marie.
With Marie.
We don't know exactly yet why they chose that for her, though. We haven't
figured that out. We still need to figure that out.
Well, it drives me crazy.
I know. I need to know. I'm dying to know. Look at, we're mm-hmm. watching it in the studio here. See this?
That purple.
Yeah, it's the purple on Saul. It's got the purple shirt.
Which they could do a show on him.
On Saul.
Isn't it interesting that Saul seems the one that has the most...
By the way, let's talk about Saul. And again, this is why Vince Gilligan and his boys are so amazing. Talk about show, don't tell. It was weeks ago where Jesse went into the house to give money to the girl and the son.
Yes.
And they have a shot of Saul just looking in the rearview mirror, watching Jesse. And he just... He didn't smile very large, but he had just a slight smile on his face that indicated he got sentimental.
Yeah.
Like, wow, isn't that, this Pinkman kid's a nice kid.
Yeah.
And for him to be sentimental like that shows that he's got
a little bit of humanity.
A little bit. Mm-hmm. And so you see it in these scenes where they come to visit him,
here's the life he could have had.
Yeah. And where he doesn't have to drop dimes, he doesn't have to do much for Walt in that moment. I mean, he gives him that number, whatever it's going to cost you. He gets paid. He's like, please, I need you to make this call for me.
Yeah.
And seems like he's empathetic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it just shows the decency of the character. And again,
that's what I was going to say. He seems to be the most decent and rational.
Out of all of them.
I do like
and
how
who thought, because in the beginning, you thought, what a schlub.
When you first introduced him, he's trying to explain him how to be.
Absolutely, what a slimy guy. No, he turns out to be.
You guys suck at peddling.
Exactly.
But here's the two things I really love about Saul. I like how he gets so irritated with everybody being so amateurs, and he's got this little, blow-up. Right. doll in the top of his business. And how he again, go back to the bridge analogy. He, if anybody, is only looking at his one little portion of the bridge. But he seems to be the only one that occasionally gets the whole picture.
Right.
And when he does, he kind of has this moment of, what are you guys getting me into? This is getting crazy. And then he's right into it.
And more symbolism with Huell saying, it was an act of God.
Yeah. That was nice. Of course, then this is where we get to see where the rug comes back into play. He trips on it, bangs his head, and who knows if he's dead or just paralyzed or whatever, but the check is in the mail.
I'm sure if it's coma or whatever, it's much,
it'd be better.
More dramatic and more pressure on
some point,
our main characters.
Yeah.
They're just laying so much in. It just seems that he's done. You're done.
Well, this is the other thing that bothered me is, you know, he's writing a check for 617 and whatever.
226.
Thank you. I knew Benjamin would think about it. I knew he'd have that. But that would bring up red flags to the IRS. Here's a guy who apparently has run his business into the ground. Would you come up with 617 in cash?
They tried to cover by the mom, by the favorite aunt, the great aunt.
No, that's what that's what she said to him. That's what Skylar said to Ted in order to get him to take it. But the IRS isn't going to go, you have an aunt?
Well, when he say that's the money that was buried with the oversight?
Well, if they know that, or if you say it's buried with the oversight, then where's the rest of it? Is there other money that's buried? This is the thing I didn't think.
Note that I was having the other day.
I think what they should have done is made some sort of payment plan or whatever, because this to me is a red flag. Usually when the IRS gets a lump sum like that, I would think that they want to go, wait, how did you get all that money so fast?
Unless he borrowed it and pull it together. You know, we'd have to talk to somebody more in corp who handles the corporate side of the IRS. There aren't many agents who do it. I know that right now with what's going on in our country and how broke we are, I know they'd be damn happy to get the money. Mm-hmm. They'd be pretty happy to get the money. And I think that that would be the first order of business.
No, I would agree with that, but I'm saying Sky's so smart about this. It just seemed like... I may be completely wrong, but that's what it seemed like to me.
I know some people who are actually going through it.
An IRS question?
Yes. Why, you're
an IRS guy?
Well, first off, let me... there's a great book. It's a fictional book called The Pale King by David Foster Wallace.
Okay.
I just only heard the word IRS. What is your question?
We're talking about the old record company. No, I'm kidding.
So they're going to make this lump sum payment for all the money he owes, for $617,000. Mm-hmm. And I would think that would bring up, if he's known as somebody who's run his business into the ground and then did it with fraud, I would think a lump sum payment of that kind of that amount would bring up a red flag to the IRS. Like, whoa, where did you get all this money? I thought you were in, don't they know he went bankrupt?
I know someone.
So where did that money come from?
Well, it's actually weird in reading about this, the book. David Foster worked there for a few years, and they're actually, in terms of who they choose to audit, they basically want to get enough money back because there's a huge gap between the money they collect and the money that they're supposed to collect.
Right.
Obviously, you know, people don't file, people underpay, or they just don't file at all. And so, in some regard, if the IRS gets that money, mm-hmm. case closed.
They're not going to question it?
I know someone right now who owes... six figures, not that much, and they just want it all, and he's trying to do a payment plan, and they're like, no, and he's basically grabbing $5,000 or $10,000 from everyone he knows, so including yours truly, and that's just what he's gonna do,
okay.
And it's six figures, so it's like 120 something like that, but they're not asking, they just want because he's trying can I do it? No, give us some money or you're going to jail.
Anyway, my point is, I think it would bring up a red flag. Even if it does, that's great because it still brings pressure to Skylar, and it still made that whole thing happen.
I mean, from what I'm seeing now, from dealing with it, they just want the money. Now, if somebody were to dime him out,
sure,
because most of the things they go on are tips. And if someone would dime them out and say, hey, why don't you, then they would check. But I think it's let's move on to the next person. I think let's put our money. Okay. We got our money now. Why we can take this time and go after someone else who has money.
Right.
John, this is I better get an exclusive for this. Back in 1986, the gap between money collected and money not collected was $30 billion. Imagine what it is today, John. You think they really You know what I mean? You think they really care?
I mean, people say they're like...
I think what they care about is that there's probably more, is my point. If I get 617,000 from them, there's probably more money there. Let's go get it. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, but I think they need the manpower. They don't have the manpower you think they do. They do, but ironically, they have the manpower to come after like people who make like under 100 a year.
Right.
They don't have the manpower to go after the corporate people. I just think they're like... Listen, people say it all the time, that they're like the mafia. They, like the mafia just wants to get paid. That's it. Get their money, move on.
Here's the point that I was trying to figure out. If they have, if he gives her the money back, why can't you just do an end around and just figure out with Saul, okay, look.
Say
just,
that with your son here.
Just use Saul to get it to the IRS under his name. Look, you
gotta
guys
give him the money.
It doesn't figure out how you can do it where you open.
I guess you could, but then who knows? She could have, should have done that originally.
Yeah,
she did.
She should have done
it
originally. Yeah. See, now, and that's the other point. When she saw him spending all that money, so I was thinking, do they not have as much money anymore?
Well, yeah, by the end, we learned that they don't.
They don't have near the amount of
money. He doesn't have the $500,000 that he needs to change his identity. So,
right, because at some point, we were talking $15 million for the year.
$7 million.
$7 million a year is he would have.
Million.
Yeah.
7.4.
Because at some point, Gus said, let's round it up to 15 when they were talking about the millions in one of the episodes. So I figured it was $15 million that he was coming his way.
But, well, he gets 7.5 a year. And then they bought the car wash for about $900,000.
Right.
And he hadn't been working with Gus for a year.
Right.
So.
Right.
And then $900,600.
Anyway, we know he doesn't have $500,000 to relocate.
Right. That's the point we know.
But here's the thing. That whatever it is, that storyline is not going away. They've put a lot of weight and effort into it. So whether or not Beneke is alive or dead, that's still going to come back. And it's staying alive. It's got to stay alive. It's a very odd way to end that storyline if it's not.
Right. Yeah, they usually don't. That stuff usually hangs out for a little bit. They use it again and again. They're really good at that.
It's crazy.
All right, so listen, I think the last thing I want to get to is the meeting in the desert. I think, unless there's anything else we wanted to cover, but the meeting in the desert with the... First of all, it's just a great shot. Just love those big, wide open expanses, the way they do that.
Do they use the same DP?
I don't know. Great question.
We'll need to.
It's got a fantastic look.
Whoever it is, that was a great representation of work there.
And just the way when the hood got pulled off and the blinding light.
The light. That was nice. And how messed up his face is.
Yeah.
Good, great makeup, by the way. Quick callback when Michael gets shot in the ear.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Throwing that flap back.
Yeah.
All irritated.
And Walt's
not upset,
just annoyed.
Irritated. Yeah. Just annoyed. I was like, their makeup is really good.
I just think of Mike saying, you're loyal to the wrong guy. And I say to myself, no, Mike, you're wrong. Yeah. Your guy, I go back to, I had this discussion with someone over the weekend, but, you know, your guy killed Victor. And I think Victor was a great earner and a great worker.
Yeah.
So it shows that he'll kill anyone that makes a mistake.
Right.
And whereas Walt won't.
No.
You know, so.
Well, I guess that's what's put
him
where he is.
But he had to kill Victor.
He has
no. I mean, he could have sent Victor
options.
Away.
Maybe sent him down to Mexico.
If he sent Victor away, Victor would have cooked, and he would have
operation.
This was Gus's thinking that if he sent Victor away, Victor would have started.
Oh no, business reasons. Great decision.
Yeah, but here's the thing. But you could easily send him. He's got a huge operation. You could have sent him out of state somewhere.
Right.
Not to cook, but to run your business elsewhere.
I think Gus thought if he was that loyal, has that amount of information, sooner or later, he's going to find somebody.
Absolutely.
No, I know. I'm just saying.
I don't know. No one's disagreeing that from a business side. It just shows how ruthless he is because the guy was so loyal to him.
Right.
And so for anyone smart to be as loyal to him, you know, when's your ticket going to get pulled?
For Mike to say that, it seems, I mean, Mike is going to get, I mean, I don't know if Mike was conscious when he realized that nobody was working on him.
Right.
But Mike was expendable. I think Mike knows that.
We're not going to see Mike for a little while because he's going to be recuperating in Mexico.
Which is good. Keep him out of the picture for a little bit. That means Walton.
Coming to the end,
we'll bring him back in.
Focus the stories. No,
but okay, just that, you know, when Walt on his knees saying, "You can't kill me, because if you do, Jesse won't cook for you." And even after all that stuff's been happening, Walt still knows that.
Right.
So I just wanted to let you know.
Tammy, thank you very much for coming in.
So they have a couple different cinematographers.
Uh huh.
One, Michael Slovis was in 2009, 2010, and then he did 14 episodes. Reynaldo Villalobos did six episodes in 2008, and then 2010 and 2011 episodes have been Peter Rainier and Nelson Cragg. And then they had two production designers for the whole series.
Wow. There you go. We need
and
to
their
talk to
art
them.
Department is massive. There's like 60 people on their art department.
Come on in. What's up?
So, which obviously just, you know, there's they pay very close attention to all that stuff.
Obviously. As you can see, they do. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for the scoop. That's an AfterBuzz exclusive.
Is that an exclusive? And
Tamara,
do you have another tax
you.
Question?
And it's not a tax question. Speaking of cinematographers, for those of you in the industry, you guys might appreciate this. Tonight is the Cinematographers Award. So check that out online, and maybe they'll hire some of these guys for Breaking Bad. Who knows?
There's an award ceremony for cinematographers?
Yes, there is.
Wow. Okay.
And it's tonight.
What about tax attorneys?
Yeah. No, not that one.
Okay.
Thank you. All right. So anything else about that tete-a-tete? I mean, the showdown.
I you see the ruthlessness and of Gus, but you also see he is unnerved because he raised his voice.
Yeah.
But I love Walt on his knees. Still kind of standing
defiant.
Up to him, yeah.
Being defiant.
And you know, Gus has got to respect that. You know, he's not sniveling, he's not crying. And I just love the fact that it's tearing Gus up to not be able to cap him.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I got to keep you alive. And he doesn't. He doesn't need to keep him alive. The only reason
is Jesse. Yeah.
Is if he can keep breaking that wedge.
He knows he's got to kill him because he knows Walt enough to know my formula means everything to me. It's my life's work. Right. And you will have to kill me to get away with this. There's no way a guy like that would relocate with his family for a little while.
Yeah.
And as soon as he got his strength back.
Well, I mean, the whole thing is we've proven that every time you leave something hanging like that, it comes back to bite you.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole idea of the vendetta. And, I mean, you can't leave anybody alive. That's why they do that.
Take them all out.
All right. Listen, we're going to go to a break now. Is there any last word before we go to our break?
No.
All right. All right, Jesse, if you do us a kind favor and take us to the commercial, please.
Want to find out what the AfterBuzz is about?
Janice is a drama queen.
This is the divide that is going to carry the series.
Give us a call. 424-256-1729. 424-256-1729.
It's television, and they want it to be as dramatic as possible.
I mean, it's Shakespearean.
You never know what goes on behind closed doors.
Find out why AfterBuzz TV is the number one source for after-show content.
Now, in the eyes of Jimmy, Nucky is a villain.
424-256-1729.
424-256-1729.
I mean, who would you guys rather hear that from? Your husband or your best friend?
The wig!
The wig will come out.
When the TV show is over, get your After Buzz on.
Give everyone a moment.
All right, and we're back. All right. So let's get it. What are we talking about?
I think we go to news.
We go to news. Yeah, Jesse, what do we got for news here for us?
AfterBuzz TV News.
All right, so Aaron Paul, Nick Offerman, and Mary Winstead from Parks and Recreation and Scott Pilgrim vs. the World have joined the cast of Ponsoldt's Smashed, an indie comedy about an alcoholic married couple who bonded over their love of drinking until the wife decides she wants to get clean. According to the film, Paul and Winstead are in talks to play the couple, and Offerman is already set to play Winstead's boss.
That's great. He's looking for new roles. Like, that's a role he'll probably kill.
Yeah, I imagine so.
That's great. No, good to
hear. I would really like to see him outside of this to see, okay, you know, what else can you do?
Can he do? Yeah, he did. He had a small role on Big Love, but it was very small. You didn't really get to see him do much.
I mean, he does a yo really good, but you know, I want to see something.
Yo, Mr. White.
Yo.
All right,
what else we got, Jay?
So Dean Norris, who plays Hank on the show, has signed up for a guest role in Castle. The Breaking Bad star will appear in an upcoming episode of the show as a hostage negotiator. His character appears when Castle and Martha get caught up in a bank heist. As well as starring in Breaking Bad, Norris has had guest roles in shows such as CSI, 24, and Medium, and emerged last month that he has signed up to appear in CSI New York.
Ooh, making the rounds there. Nice. He's always good. I've seen him in a million things.
I don't think you're going to be able to hide these guys.
No.
I think they're going to show up in a lot of stuff.
All right, and that's your AfterBuzz TV Breaking Bad news and gossip for the week of September 25th, 2011.
Thank you very much, Jesse.
Thank you,
all right, let's go straight to predictions.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
What do you got, Ben?
Who lives,
anything?
Who dies? Who lives, who dies?
Well, from
I think Beneke's alive. I predict he's not dead. I predict that's my prediction.
Right, I'll go along with that. I don't think he's dead. I think it's good to keep him alive and keep him pushing buttons.
I think Walt's gonna begin plotting his comeback.
Yeah, is gonna happen is these last two episodes. If I think back to last season's two episodes when we had the drive run. I'm sorry. It was run.
Yeah. No, that was the
last episode.
Season two.
Wasn't it? Or was that?
No. That was
that a finale?
Early season.
Was
three.
The finale?
Nope. That was the finale. I'm sorry.
It wasn't when he
runs over the
he runs over the kids.
Yeah.
He runs over the two guys.
The other
guy,
one.
And last season, of course, was with the Gale thing. So, but even I remember one of them being even the penultimate episode was had this great cliffhanger. It was like what. And then, because I thought that would have been the cliffhanger, I can't even remember what season it was.
They get really good, not that they're not really good already, but once you get to the second to last
to last one, it's just wow.
That's usually...
Yeah, you think that's the cliffhanger, or you think that's the last episode.
It's usually pretty
not.
Big.
That's true. Aaron did, when we had our conversation with Aaron Paul the other day, he was telling us that the last four episodes are amazing. And he was right. Obviously, the last two that we've seen, today's and last week's, have been amazing. So I can't even wait for these other two. I don't really have a prediction other than I think we're going to set up the arc, obviously, for the next season, which is going to be Walt, I think, becoming the Heisenberg. We've been dying to see him come. I mean, we've got to see something.
So I wonder,
we've only seen glimpses.
Do you guys think,
we haven't really
does Gus get vanquished, or does he just get...
No.
He can't exist in... Walt and he cannot exist in the same world.
So you
just
think...
heading... One of those two are dying.
And do you think by this season...
Yeah, I've read a description of episode 13, and
which is...
Walt and Gus have a showdown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's going to be
It's going to be
so,
awesome.
But do you think he's going to kill him, or do you think,
I think
it's going to set up
he'll have
the
to.
Next season, and the whole next season is them two at it? I mean...
Does it become Ronnie and Sammy on Jersey Shore, where it's just too much just to have those two battling each other season?
I don't think it's going to make everyone laugh.
But, you know, do we have to create a new nemesis?
Actually, they're merging the two shows.
I really don't think that's going to happen.
Well, it can't be the cartel, so who else could they bring in? Because the cartel,
somebody knew. I mean,
unless somebody else from the cartel.
Well, from Chile.
This whole season,
well, that's true,
was about Walt and Gus's constant battles.
Right.
They set that up.
Well,
this was
about their mental battles. It wasn't really anything about physical. There was no gun.
I just can't see them going a whole season.
I can't either. But I'm just trying to figure out who would be.
He may go to jail and maybe doing things from the jail. Who knows? You know, it might be something like that. But Chile, I think we don't know what's down in Chile
exactly,
and who he is.
And yeah. That's true.
Because they are running out of things for him to run from. I mean, you know, he's come out to his wife, so she's in on it. You know, I mean, Hank, how long can they keep that investigation going without him looking, you know, inept? So it's because Chile. Sure.
The people from Chile make their to come and.
And does Hank help out?
Maybe they'll bring Saul up more.
What are they going to do, Hank?
I don't know. I just know Walt's making a comeback. That's all I'm saying. It may not be next week. Yeah. It'll be the week after. And I know I hate the fact I have to wait 14 days to get to this ending.
I'm sorry, buddy.
Oh, but are you kidding? You're going to have to wait how many months for it to start up again?
After that, I know.
Crazy.
No, it's brutal. It's brutal.
It's tough for
you're
him.
You're going to have to... You know,
awful.
Yeah.
Go through your box.
Yeah. No. My subutext is Boardwalk Empire.
Okay, there you go.
That started tonight, so that's good. That'll keep me going.
All right. Okay, before we leave, let's remind everybody again about the finale that we're...
as of now, tentative date, October 8th for the season finale. We hope to be live at the John Lovitz Comedy Club watching the show. If you're in L.A. and you're a fan of the show, a fan of Breaking Bad, come on down and watch it there at the club. There's drinks and food. We'll all watch it together, and then hopefully... we'll go up live and do an after show there, and we should have Maria Menounos as well as some of the people from Breaking Bad.
I think it's October. Oh, here comes Phil.
Uh-oh, we got another.
Oh, sorry. What
do we got? Make a correction. It is the John Lovitz Comedy Club. However, it also turns into the John Lovitz Podcast Theater.
Oh, yes. Oh. Podcast Theater.
So we can't be funny.
Thank you for that correction.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
It's
you'll have no problem with that.
I think it's ninth? The 9th. The 9th is
the 9th is Sunday, then is the 9th.
Yeah. Okay. So, sorry, check your local listings.
We'll talk. We'll tell. Hopefully, we'll have more to tell you guys next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. We'll have more information next week for you. Hopefully, it'll mostly be solidified, so we'll know exactly what's happening where. All right. Well, that's it for everybody. Anybody have any last words before we check out of here?
I just, how powerful was the laughter at the end?
Oh, that's
it
right.
Was
we were
like
talking about
Joker,
that.
Joker,
yeah.
My crazy, God.
Yeah, you know, when he started, it sounded like he was crying at first, and that crying made, you know, segued into laughing and the cackling. And I loved how you just heard it, and she's on
great
the phone.
Great sound design. Great sound design.
Oh, God, that was amazing.
Not only was she on the phone, but she was like back to her normal. I just got to maintain. I'm going to, everything's
right.
going to be
she's
fine.
Stepping up
tears
for
in her eyes.
Again, the bridge. She's only seeing her portion of the bridge right there. She's right on the
God,
phone. I'm only
going
to see that portion.
Oh God!
And this scene right here, framed where he is in a box. They literally have boxed him in.
Yep.
In the crawl space.
In the crawl space. How low can you go?
You see the way she backs away. The wife, like, oh my goodness,
freaking out. Yeah. Just terrific stuff. Great stuff, guys. All right, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us here for another AfterBuzz Breaking Bad. For Jesse Janity in the booth. For Steve Bottomley out here. For Big Ben. For Kevin Undergaro. I'm your host, John Comerford Zen. Thank you, and we are out.
From producers Kevin Undergaro and Phil Svitek, engineer DJ Jesse Janity, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. If you have questions or comments, be sure to buzz us at info@AfterBuzzTV.com. And you can find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter by searching for AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
Views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.